I'm going to bring the committee to order. We're about 5 minutes late, so I guess that'll just cut into the recess time. Representative Dabney, could you present your bill to the committee, and when we will, Mr. Do we have it in our possession, or is it a friendly hearing?
Representative Mahoney, good morning, Mr. Chair. It is a friendly hearing, as the experiences with you always are.
That would not be what was said earlier this morning, but
or that I've said at other times, but you know.
But without cookies, then what are you going to do?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1747 before this committee. It is in possession of the Tax Committee. We did have a hearing last evening, and I think. Even though most of those committee members don't have the understanding and appreciation of the challenges facing the bioscience industry in Minnesota as you do, there was a significant and interesting amount of interest and recognition that there is a role for the state to step in this area. I'm a school teacher by trade in real life, as many of you know, and when I talk to my students, I often tell them to go with their strengths. It's kind of a tagline for me. I think that works when Minnesota looks at its economy as well. Go with our strengths, build on what we know, build on what we do well already, and we're more likely to be successful at that. And one area that Minnesota has long excelled is in the area of bioscience. Spoken broadly, whether it's the development of new treatments and care at the Mayo Clinic, or the development of places like 3M and Medtronic over the years, the research at the University of Minnesota, we have been a national and an international focus and source of important developments in bioscience. Unfortunately, at this point in our evolution, we are threatened. And we're threatened because while wonderful research continues to be done, and while there are a number of top-of-the-line large companies here doing amazing things in the bioscience field, where we're lacking is in the small companies, who can often be the first ones to take a research idea, stick their neck out, do the entrepreneurial work, and try to bring that research to a commercial product and then sell that product. And then if they're really lucky, get bought up by one of these big firms that's lurking around. We have actually been losing jobs in the bioscience field, as I'm sure committee members are more aware than average. And looking at providing resources and opportunities for those small companies to take those ideas, nurture them, and bring them to market is the focus of this bill. It's set up as a tax credit. I think there's some folks who can speak here more knowledgeably about the ins and outs than I, but the focus is on working with our researchers and working with our very small businesses on moving things to market and strengthening the broad bioscience industry here in Minnesota. I have with me today two folks who can speak to the bill, Ms. Linda Sandvig and Mr. Don Gerhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Linda Sandvig. I'm here on behalf of Life Science Alley. We'd like to thank Representative Dabney for bringing this bill forward. I think if you look at Life Science Alley as far as kind of our legislative agenda, there's kind of three when we look at a stool, kind of three prongs to that, and looking at, and we've heard bills in this committee that certainly deal with research. That's a very important component if you look at any bioscience area, strong area in the country. Educated workforce, that's one of the things we've always heard as far as looking at in any of the bioscience, particularly medical device. But the other one is business development, and certainly there have been a number of bills that have been heard here in dealing with that, and I would put this one in that parameter. As Representative Dabney said, and as you've also already heard from the Biobusiness Alliance, one of the things they found in their survey is that we are behind other states when it comes to startups. And looking at what we need to do that, and also looking at, particularly in the bioscience area, because we need that convergence with how we're going to support some of our strengths in the medical device area, too. So what this bill tries to do is look strategically at what can we do. And basically, when we've had roundtables and things like that and have talked with small companies, the number one issue that comes up is capital. how can we deal with this? This bill addresses a specific niche in that what we find, and there'll be more information kind of as far as looking at, we'd say this is an angel investment bill. What we're looking at is the very small investments. Some of our companies say it's much easier to find $20 million to go in the investment than it is to be able to find $500,000 or $100,000 and things like that. This is the niche that we're trying to address in looking at angel investors. What this bill does is it's based on a Wisconsin model. Wisconsin, when they did their $750 million looking at bioscience, put in an investment tax credit proposal. And basically what they put in is $6 million over a 10-year period. Or $10 million, I take that back, $10 million over a 6-year period. In the first 15 months, they found with a $4 million seed investment that they were able to generate $19 million. And this is what's really critical. It's kind of in between for these companies when maybe they've gotten family, friends, their own investment type of thing, and before they're going to attract larger investments, it's kind of a stopgap type of thing that this bill is trying to address. In looking at the Wisconsin model and actually even talking to them, we're looking at a 25% investment credit that would go based on the investment, and that would be up to $50,000 for individual investors, up to $600,000 for a pass-through entity. In looking at that, but no partner would have any more than $50,000 in that investment. We'd also be looking at an amendment was added in tax committee that was not on the original bill to really make sure that we're focusing on the bioscience, biotech, medical device industry, that we really want this bill streamlined in dealing with it, and that it would be located in Minnesota. 51% of the employees are in the state, and that they haven't received more than $1 million in previous investments that qualified, and not received more than $2 million in private equity investment. And that's kind of a key component that looks at the size of these companies. In fact, Wisconsin had a $5 million, and they told us that they would have had it a smaller in really kind of targeting. I will end there with that and turn it over to Don Gerhardt, who's the CEO of Life Science Alley, to talk more about the need and how this fits into the niche.
Well, thank you. And before you start, I would just like to take a minute to, I was almost going to call the teacher Mr. Chair. Welcome to class. I'm not going to even try to pronounce the name because I will miss the students from the AP government class in Chaska High School. I'm so bad with names that I'm not going to try and pronounce the teacher's name. I'm wondering, though, how many of you know who your legislator is and if it is Joe Hoppe. I see one person. All right. I think that the teacher has just been instructed on what he's got to put on the final exam. State Senator? Yes. That's what I was thinking. I want to tell you that as a legislator, I think it's very, very important and for the kids in our high schools to start figuring out how government works, particularly the AP. My youngest child went through an AP government class where she went to high school, and I have to tell you, the most fun I've had is taking the current finance commissioner, Mr. Hansen, and myself went and had an argument in front of her class about politics and how you do a political campaign. And even when she was 17, she actually said to me, "Dad, that was pretty cool." That was the only time her father was ever cool. So, AP government, good for you. Government is what's going to affect your life a lot, and I'm glad you're here. Let's continue.
Mr. Chair, representatives, thank you very much for meeting with us this morning. We really appreciate this time with you. Excuse me. My name is Don Gerhardt. I'm the CEO of Life Science Alley, a trade association representing the medical technology and biotechnology industries in Minnesota. Just as Representative Dabney's profession is absolutely key to this industry, its strength and its ongoing vitality in the state, education is absolutely key. Absolutely key to it also is being able to provide funding, early stage funding for good ideas and good entrepreneurs and good science. So that is the basis of what we present to you today. We need additional early stage funding in this state, period, because we are lagging substantially from what we used to be or what we need to do to keep up with competitors, both states and other parts of the world. So let me give you just a couple of bullet points of information, then I'll get you to the back of the piece of paper that we just passed out. It is the University of New Hampshire just completed a study that showed early stage funding through the angel world is alive and healthy in a good share of the United States. The problem inside it is there are lots of new angel investors that are calling themselves angel investors that aren't investing. They don't understand the complexity of this science. They don't understand that it's a longer-term return. It takes a little longer for a bioscience company to mature. So that the importance to get them in the game, to incent them to get in the game of investing in bioscience is just absolutely vital. So that's one point we want to give you. The other is that the key components in this life science, bioscience thing are people and capital. Linda talked about that. So it's the educated workforce, and then it's the capital to get it going. Linda talked about a little bit about why we're focusing it. We're focusing this very finely because it's an investment in jobs, it's an investment in people, and it's an investment in ideas. Finally, it's not a metrocentric issue. The bill as it's constructed will fund good ideas and good people around the state. And the backside of the paper that we handed out identifies a sampling of outstate companies and early stage organizations that are extremely important for you to understand that the Angel Network is much better organized in outstate Minnesota and is making investments in small organizations in outstate Minnesota, and we know that that will continue. So those are the pieces of information I wanted to give you. We've got a couple of other people that have real experience in this world of early stage investing and gaining the money that we want to talk to you also. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Do you have any other testifiers?
Oh, well, Mr. Chair, you've got a list of testifiers speaking to the issue today.
I mean, I did my homework here. There's a third page down. Thank you. Tom Johnson. He's got a moment to come down. And it's good to see you again, Mr. Johnson. We haven't spoken for since... I think we actually did have a chance to chit-chat a little bit earlier this year, but I haven't talked to you this year much at all. So it's good to have you in front of the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Doug Johnson. I am the director of the University Venture Center at the University of Minnesota, and look forward to testifying here today. I have included in the handouts a summary of the presentation that I'm about to make.
Did you want to hand that out, or do you want to use a PowerPoint?
I can use a PowerPoint, and the handouts are up here, and I believe they're in the packets of the committee. So that you'd be able to gauge from where I am speaking, I'll take just a couple minutes and go through my background. I've graduated from the University of Minnesota and a very long time ago. Worked for IBM for 10 years in large mainframe systems. I was in the investment banking business for 3 years with Dane Bosworth. And then for over a decade, I was a senior officer and general partner with Norwest Venture Capital when they were still here in Minnesota. starting out with a fund of about $50 million. We grew that to over $600 million and started a buyout business that is currently almost $3 billion in size that does buyout and private equity investments. Unfortunately, they are no longer a presence in the state, and so for the last 15 years or so, I've been a private investor, working with a variety of early-stage companies, both information technology and medical device. And for the last 7 years, I've worked off and on with the University of Minnesota, initially constructing and teaching a class in venture capital and its associated methodologies within the MBA program in the Carleton School. And then for the past year and a half to 2 years, working with the VP for research at the University of Minnesota and setting up the organization which I currently run, which is focused on creating more successful early stage companies from University of Minnesota Technologies. For those of you who are not familiar with the situation, just one example, the University of Minnesota had the world's first widely accepted browser. It was well prior to Mosaic and Netscape. It was called the Gopher browser. It was a character-based browser. Unfortunately, we still have it. We didn't do anything with it. We didn't achieve what could have been achieved as a result of putting a graphical user interface on it like they did at Netscape and starting the Internet revolution. So we were there first, but basically didn't have the connections to the entrepreneurial community to make that work. So the university has now addressed that in a systematic fashion and has set up the organization that I currently work with to make sure that future startups of value are properly set up, annotated, and spun off. Representative Mahoney asked me to spend a few minutes talking about venture capital and particularly with respect to biosciences and emerging technologies, and I'll start that discussion. Now, feel free to interrupt me at any time if you have any questions. The data sources for the material I'm presenting are annotated on the handout as well as on the presentation. Where does venture capital fit, and what is its purpose? When a person has a great idea for a new company, they typically need cash to make it work. What you see in front of you is a list of the sources of capital for an early stage company, starting out with very, very early stage where the entrepreneur uses his personal funds and credit. Secondly, he looks at friends and family. Third, they look at angel investors, other investors who are individuals who are investing in this space. And the fourth layer really is the whole institutional venture capital business. As the company becomes less risky, you can get into direct corporate investments and some of the other modes of financing that are listed further on down. You see an initial public offering. That's a good way of financing more mature companies, but certainly not early stage companies. Venture capital is professionally managed pools of money. These are typically organized by people with experience in the business. It often takes 5 or 10 years experience in the business before one is able to have the track record of success to raise a professional pool of money from institutional investors. These people are active, they're involved, they're always board members, they serve as mentors for the people in the company that are running the company, and they are aware of the fact that in an early stage, high technology company, it's very difficult to see the future, and when you do see the future, clearly it oftentimes changes. So you have to be fairly flexible in your ability and in your holding management accountable for things that were completely unforeseen when you put the plan together. Venture capital always takes equity, which means that they have no collateral in the businesses in which they invest. Bankers are typically collateralized, which means that they have an ability to, if things go wrong, take over certain assets of the company and get paid back. Venture capital rarely has any collateral, and they are equity investors. They have a long-term perspective. The typical venture capital fund has a 10-year period of life, and it has oftentimes up to 3 or 4 one-year extensions. And they always need to change the stock certificates that they get in exchange for their first equity investments in the company into a liquid security because the investors which they serve need liquidity for the pension funds or whoever it is that's the eventual owner of that security. I mentioned already that this is not debt, it's equity. Typically, venture capital is looking for home runs and not singles. By that I mean this, the typical venture capital portfolio out of 10 investments will have 4 losses. 40% of their companies will generate a loss. That's either some or all of the investment that the venture capitalists have put into the investments. In 3 out of 10, there is a partial loss or a modest return. In 2 of the 10, there's about a 3 to 5 times return of their initial money. And in only 1 out of 10 of investments made in the venture business, is there a substantial return. Some of the returns that we made in our portfolio were in excess of 1,000 times our initial value. And that's what you need in order to make up for the fact that so many of these are losses. Again, they have a long-term horizon, typically over 10 years. They need liquidity, and they hold management accountable. As an asset class, venture capital is relatively modest. As you see, of a typical large portfolio consists of public stocks, public bonds, and private equity. The private equity side of it can vary anywhere between 5 and 20%. Venture capital in the United States last year raised $25 billion. Buyout and mezzanine financing raised $300 billion. From a historical point of view, in the last 5 years, since the year 2000 bubble, venture capital returns have been subpar, have been below average, and continue to remain so at this point. Buyout and mezzanine financings have been extraordinarily attractive as the stock market valuations have been low and returns in that business have been 40 to 100% per year. So venture capital is an important element of a typical asset class portfolio, but it's quite small. Venture capital is a function of where you look at it. If you're an investor, it's an investment. If you're a company, it's capital. If you're a management team, it adds leadership and contacts. If you're a state, it truly has the ability to generate economic development. If you're a university, it's a great way to commercialize university technologies. It's an innovation engine. It creates substantial job growth. And it's a research magnet for a community. The economic impact of venture capital on the economy is quite significant. In a study in 2004 commissioned by the National Venture Capital Association, venture capital firms accounted for over 10 million employees and jobs and annual revenues of the companies in which they served of $1.8 trillion. That's 9.5% of U.S. payroll and 9.6% of GDP. As I'll discuss in just a moment, these jobs are typically pay more than non-venture capital jobs, and the companies are performing in a better fashion. Bear in mind that creating 9.5% of U.S. payroll and 9.6% of U.S. GDP was a result of consuming only 2% of all the equity investments made in the U.S. So venture capital as a practice has been proven over 30 years and generates substantial returns for its investors and generates excellent companies. What do these companies look like? If we take a look at how they do in, and I apologize for the confusing number of elements on this chart, you can see it on your handout better. Basically, the first two columns delineate VBC, it stands for venture-backed companies, and the total employment is all of the companies in a particular economy. As you see, venture-backed companies typically grow their employment more rapidly than the economy as a whole. In biotechnology, during the period of 2000 to 2003, venture-backed companies grew 23% in employees, and the total employment growth was only 5% in biotechnology. And you can see how in every single case, the performance of the venture-backed companies was superior to or equal to the rest of the economy combined. Why is that? It's because the companies themselves are pre-selected by experienced people who understand how to evaluate criteria for success. Secondly, because it's structured in such a fashion as to allow the management team to achieve mentoring and additional qualifications from experienced managers. And third, the equity capital itself provides a cushion for these companies to weather storms that normal companies in an economy do not have. The benefits of venture investment to a region, to a state, are listed here. Clearly, higher state gross product, higher total wages, more patents, and higher productivity has been documented. There's also a handout that I believe is in the packet of the committee that delineates this verbally in a report done by the National Venture Capital Association in 2004. Whole sectors have been created and will be created primarily as a result of investment by venture capital. Biotechnology is an interesting field. Well over 50% of all bioscience companies in the U.S. were started in universities, and they were almost all financed with venture capital. On the medical device side, as you see here, we have a robust medical device community in the venture capital system we have. Medtronic started out initially a long time ago as a venture capital investment along with individual investors and basically started the medical device community in the entire world. In Minnesota, the story is a bit different. From the boom of 2000 through the recession of 2003, venture-backed employment grew 4% in the state to 288,000, while total Minnesota employment fell 2%. This is all delineated and annotated in the study that I've handed out. And venture-backed company sales revenue grew 15% to about 27% of Minnesota's GDP. However, the share of total venture capital in Minnesota has a declining trend. In 1995, we received 26% of the amount that was received in Massachusetts and 5.5% of that received in California. Those are two relevant measures because California and Massachusetts both lead the nation in receipt of venture capital. In 2000, 5 years later, we were down to 10% of Massachusetts total and 2.5% of California. In 2005, we're down further, 8.9% and 2%. We don't know if this is a reversible trend. There are fewer and fewer Minnesota investors. One of the problems clearly has been that the university has been deficient in its ability to systematically spin out companies as a result of its technology generation capabilities. There's 3,500 professors and PIs, principal investigators at the university. We hope to satisfy or remedy that situation through my activities. And we are finding, interestingly, that there's very little problem in getting any venture capitalists to come to the state as long as we have a promising opportunity to show them that fits their field of investment. So I guess my summary on venture capital in Minnesota, it's declining. We see fewer and fewer information technology deals. The pure bioscience deals that are getting done are typically medical device companies. There are fewer and fewer pure bioscience deals getting done because they require a lot of capital and a lot of time, and there are fewer and fewer bioscience venture investors in the state.
Mr. Johnson?
Yes.
You were asked for questions as you proceeded, so I think I'm going to call on Representative Beard. He had a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, concerning this issue right here, the decline of venture capital in Minnesota, I just want to be clear. Are we talking about people who live in Minnesota who invest as venture capitalists? Or are we talking about deals that are based here that attract venture capital from anywhere? You follow my question?
Yes, I do, Representative Beard. The answer is that this measures the amount of capital received by Minnesota companies, no matter where the investors are located.
That's good to know. Thank you.
I have a question. Mr. Johnson, I have a question also. You stated that we don't have a problem getting venture capitalists to come and invest here if we have the product that fits their portfolio, I think is the word you used.
Correct.
So the question then becomes, is that arc of portfolios so large that there's something for everyone there, or is it so narrow, and we in the state of Minnesota and our Twin City campus, where the majority of our research gets done, is not researching the areas that there's a lot of capital?
The research capabilities of the university are driven by science, not commercial interest, and we have only now begun to direct a program to the faculty at the university that educates them with respect to commercial viability to be integrated into their research programs intelligently, but clearly it's a directed program for each PI that's individually driven, and we can't affect it. Second point is the reason that venture capital funds do not come to Minnesota for bioscience deals is that university deals are too early, and the clinical trials are not completed. The proof of principle is typically completed, but there's very little animal work that's gone on. And the reason for that is that National Institute of Health and National Science Foundation rules basically say that as soon as a scientist comes up with something useful, they stop funding it. It sounds ridiculous, but it is true. And so commercially viable programs that look excited and from a point of view of a market look very large don't have the necessary robustness. They probably lack $1 million, $2 million. They haven't gone through toxicity trials, and they are too early for the typical venture fund to look at. The gap that we're addressing with the bill here is clearly focused on that, and would be beneficial to all of us, I believe. So I think it's primarily in the stage of the company, Representative Mahoney, that we are deficient in. We have great science. We lack the first step out of the university, which is the initial dollars to take it from proof of concept to something that's commercially interesting.
Mr. Johnson, we have three other testifiers, and we have three questioners here, so I'm going to call on them and hopefully then have you finish up so we can get some of the other people up.
Okay.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, you talked about Massachusetts and California leading the nation. I'm just curious, why is that, and have they done incentives? What have they done to lead?
It's historical. Part of it has to do with the fact that there are clusters of universities in both coasts, headed up by Stanford and MIT and Harvard. The venture capital community in both of those regions has been in existence for the last 30 years, and we just don't have that cluster of investors in this town. I can't tell you why, we just don't.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering about the relationship between angel investor communities and the venture capital funds. I work at a startup software company. We have angel investors, and it's a four-year-old software company, so it's by those standards pretty successful. But the angels that we have from the coast seem to be much better connected to funds than the ones from Minnesota. And a lot of that just seems to me to be based on relationships and proximity. And I guess as we're looking over this bill, which as far as I can tell creates incentives for angels in Minnesota, is that really going to help draw venture capital dollars this way if the people don't have the contacts basically on the coast to bring some of that money in?
Well, clearly you need the contacts, but it's not that hard to call or email or find contacts. There aren't that many venture funds for a specific kind of a deal. I believe that the lack of capital for early stage companies, particularly bioscience, is more critical than the lack of contacts. There's other issues also. There's management issues. There's not a lot of bioscience experience management in this town, but that's a separate issue. So I believe that the benefit of the bill will be apparent, and that we will be able to bring in outside venture investors for the proper for the proper deals.
Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I want to follow up on a question that the chair asked you. And it was, I think, in response to a comment you made that currently our university is deficient in spinning off companies, getting the commercialization done. And you mentioned a couple things. You know, it could be the culture and tradition of our principal investigators. Maybe it's the angel or venture capital environment here in Minnesota. But if I could ask you just to prioritize and help us as a committee figure out what are the one or two things that need to happen. Maybe it's at the state in a bill like this with tax credits. Maybe it's a culture the university needs to change. But what are those one or two things that, if they happened in Minnesota, would greatly increase the strength of our bioscience sector?
This sounds self-serving, and it's not meant to be, but I believe the work the university is doing in putting resources and people who are experienced into this area so that there is a systematic and regular process by which to evaluate early stage bioscience companies in the university, construct those that are appropriate, and add resources both through angel investors and through venture investors, which also includes management. That is the thing that we need to do, and it's not a simple program. You need three elements to be successful in an early stage company. You need world class technology, which we have. You need early stage world class management, which in bioscience we are not, we don't have a lot of. And third, you need experienced investors in that stage. I believe that the work the university is doing, and the university is putting substantial resources into this program. Given the fact that bioscience companies typically originate in universities, I believe that's the most important thing for the state. And I don't say it in self-serving fashion, because we have a five-year commitment from the university, and we appear to be making good progress. But you need those three elements, and for the typical person, even a venture investor, to wander through the university in search of deals is hopeless. It's just not set up that way. So it wasn't a straight, easy answer, but I think that's the situation we're in. And I will only have one or two more slides. This shows the Minnesota share of the U.S. venture capital investment, which we have about 2% of the population in the state, and we're getting about 1.25% of the venture capital. And then over the last 7 or 8 years, the amount of early-stage investment capital in venture capital in Minnesota has declined precipitously, which is probably well-known to everyone. In the bioscience area, we're getting more than our fair share of investment dollars. It's about 4.5% last year. Again, we have about 2% of the population. This is almost solely medical devices, however. There are very few bioscience, pure bioscience fundings done in this state. In the nation, bioscience is second only to software investments, 17% of all venture investing. And it's a growing industry. 3,495 biotech companies have received $33 billion in funding in the last 10 years. And then my last slide is, it's possible for us to go from the medical device industry gradually into the biotech arena. That's the position of the University of Minnesota. We're forming a center for combination devices, which looks at the delivery of biopharmaceutical products through medical devices remotely employed. And my last point is the U.S. biotechnology industry would not exist without venture capital.
Mr. Johnson, thank you very much. I hope that the members, Mr. Johnson is very well regarded and has picked up the phone any number of times when I've called him with a pretty straightforward answer. Sometimes not to my liking, but at least I knew exactly I was getting it too. And that's very appreciative up here. I highly recommend you to follow up if you've got serious questions about venture capital with Mr. Johnson. He is a very good source.
Thank you, Chairman.
I believe Kevin Roche from Roche Consulting. Welcome to the committee, and
thank you,
please state your name for the record.
I'm Kevin Roche. I'm the head of my consulting firm, which is known as Roche Consulting. I'm also involved as an investor or board member or advisor with a number of medical device and biotech companies, and I'm also the CEO of a small startup biotech company. I'm very pleased to have the opportunity to talk with you a little this morning, and I'll just add a couple of comments to what Mr. Johnson and Mr. Gerhardt have already told you. Minnesota is very fortunate to have a very vibrant community of entrepreneurs and innovators, and those people produce many good ideas that are worthy of commercialization. The biggest barrier to those ideas going forward is typically an inability to get early stage funding. And that problem has gotten significantly worse over the last few years. I think one of the causes for that is that there used to be in this state, which has never had a very large number of actual venture capital funds, there used to be a few that actually did some early stage or seed investing, and Doug probably knows this better than I do, but I'm not sure there's one formal fund left in Minnesota that really does early stage or seed investing. And what that means is that kind of investing now has to come pretty much completely from individuals. Individuals have lots of different vehicles to make investments. It is often difficult for them to assess the viability of a particular technology that's going into a company, so it seems riskier to an individual than it would usually to a professional venture capital firm that has employees who are very experienced at evaluating various types of companies to invest in. What I've seen in several times a month, I talk to people who are interested in starting companies. Most of those people have as their primary concern, where am I going to get the next $100,000, the next $200,000 to kind of move this forward? And most of them are not able to find the amount of money that they need to move those companies forward at an appropriate pace. I can think of two companies that I am personally involved with now that did raise some early stage money a couple of years ago, but are now basically stymied in moving forward because they can't find additional money. So I think there is a real problem in this area of finding early stage money, and I believe that the tax credit that's proposed will help by lessening the perceived risk to the individual investors who make these investments. So I would encourage you to do what you can to support that tax credit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Roche. You actually answered the question that I was going to ask. Is could you give us some your opinion or some information on how you viewed this tax credit and how it might help our angel investment environment? So I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. I think Kurt Kilhorn, did I pronounce it correctly?
Oh, yeah. Kurt Kinghorn.
Kinghorn. Thank you. Sorry about that.
Okay. I'm Kurt Kinghorn. I'm president, chairman, CEO, and president of a medical company called Anoka Biomedical. I'm also an attorney by trade, and while that's building up for reasons which we'll talk about in a minute, I'm also have a little law practice on the side, and have quite a bit of experience advising small and startup companies. That's the area that we specialize in. Just to give you a little idea of my background here and how it relates to this, I was at Medtronic. I was chief patent counsel of the neurological and cardiac surgery business, and then I was general counsel of their surgical technologies business, which was their more or less emerging technologies business. I left there 2.5 years ago to start a medical device company, and I have to be honest with you, if I knew it was as hard as it was, I maybe not would have done that. And the hard part has to do with the financing part. And so just a little tiny background on what ours does. Yeah, ours just connects vessels, so when you do coronary artery bypass surgery, instead of doing it by hand, there's a little device that clips on there, makes it a lot easier to do. Well, I was working at Medtronic. I have a pretty good idea of having evaluated hundreds and hundreds of technologies and been involved in lots of deals. I have a pretty good idea of what's a good idea and what's not a good idea. And so I felt pretty good about leaving to go start this business. What I didn't realize was how hard it was to raise capital. And when I first started, we looked around here in Minnesota and talked to lots of people. And I would say by lot, probably about 60 angel-type investors. And what I found was the same answer again and again and again, and that is, if you, you know, it's a great idea, great technology, great market, great management team, great everything. How do you know it works? And I said, well, you know, in medical device stuff, we have to go prove that, and that's sometimes a little bit difficult and expensive proposition. In our case, it's about $500,000 proposition because there's animal tests and everything in it. So they'd say, well, it's, you know, you're just too early for us. So come and see us after you prove the technology works, and we've got plenty of money for you. And I said, well, thanks very much, but I have the very problem that I can't get to there first, so help me out now, and I'll give you really good terms. And inevitably, they would say, that's just not our risk profile. We just can't do it. Go away. And so we struggled mightily with that situation. Well, as I got a little more wise, a little more experienced, I became aware that where is the early stage money? And it's on the East Coast and West Coast, as you heard before, and particularly Boston. Although I'll say Atlanta has also surprisingly picked up on that, and California, particularly Silicon Valley. So the dilemma, though, that you have with getting money from them is they want you to move. And so they say, okay, fine, we'll give you that early stage money, but you've got to move to Boston or you've got to move to Silicon Valley. Well, I like it here, and I'm not anxious to move. And so you're caught in a dilemma of, do I give up because you need to have that early stage, or do I sell my soul to the devil, basically, and move to Boston or wherever. And so in this environment that we were in, I just want to tell you a little experience we had. So I got approached by someone who was a broker from the state of Ohio. And what Ohio had done is they had started something called the third-tier program. And in that third-tier program, the voters of the state of Ohio had voted to put some money to make available to seed companies. And in particular, there was a portion of that that got a grant given to the Cleveland Clinic, which probably knows a big facility there. And so they were looking for medical device companies, and so they actually hired brokers to come to Minnesota and identify medical device companies. And we were one of the ones that were identified. And what was different about this opportunity with Ohio was instead of you got to move everything to Ohio, they told us you only have to move some things to Ohio, which was new. And what that showed me is they'd become sort of involved in their thinking. And so cause I told them right up front, we're not interested in moving everything to Ohio. And so that's fine. So anyway, as a result of that, Cleveland Clinic evaluated our technology, and et cetera, and on and on and on. And at the end of that, we have been granted a grant, and it's $500,000 grant to prove our technology, another $500,000 to if I want to move my whole company there, which I don't, and then $100,000 for every job that I bring to the state of Ohio. And so, and it's kind of like camel with his nose in the tent, the old Arab proverb. You know, they're pretty devious because you don't have to move everything here, but we're going to make it so enticing that, you know, pretty soon it's hard. So here I am in the situation of, do I take advantage of this opportunity from Ohio, or do I continue to limp along funding as we have been doing self-funding and maybe giving up on the whole thing just because it's too hard? And so anyway, that's the dilemma that we're in. Just, you might be interested in knowing this, and I'm just reporting something. I went to as part of that process, the evaluation process, I was invited out to Cleveland Clinic, and they had several Midwest investors, early stage investors, and do presentations to those of us that were part of that being considered. And they had some statistics from a trade organization that they belong to. And we're talking about seed or startup money now. And according to them, pre.com, which would be 1999, 28% of these investment companies had, 28% of their portfolio was in seed or startup money. And you might argue that's maybe too much, but anyway, 28%. Well, after the dot-com debacle, so the latest year they had data for 2005, that was 2.7%. So, you know, that's a significant drop down. And as I point out to my wife all the time when she gets frustrated with my entrepreneurial enterprises, every company that was big started small. And if you don't start small, there won't be any bids, and or the whole environment will change. So I also want to just tell you a little bit about, just so you know, when we got awarded this grant, all of a sudden out of the woodwork in the state of Ohio came all kinds of sources of funding. And so, for example, they have regional, county, and citywide incentive programs, the likes of which I just say pretty clear we don't have here in Minnesota. So, for example, the city of Cleveland has a what they call a tech czar, and that person calls me right up and says, here's what we will do. We will give you space. We will give you people on the ground to do legwork. We will give you low-interest or no-interest loans. We will give you, I mean, it's just a whole laundry list of things to try and get me to entice to move to Cleveland. That same sort of thing exists in all, there's a six or seven county area there around Cleveland, and it's just, it's an amazing thing. And the likes of which I think we have not here in Minnesota. So just sort of in conclusion there, you know, here's the dilemma that I and other small inventors have. And by the way, just back to the investment capital in Minnesota. There are people here that have money to spend in seed capital, and I've talked to many of them, and they send their money for seed capital stuff to the coast. And there's virtually none available here. Is Minnesota money in Minnesota funds for Minnesota companies. And so as it relates to this bill and the lowering of risk, this isn't going to be the panacea, but I think it's a good thing. And I think anything we can do to entice our Minnesota money to stay here and keep Minnesota companies here is a good thing. So I guess that's about all I have to say on that.
Any questions? Amazing. Thank you very much. It's very eye-opening. And it would be interesting to see some of the enticements that Ohio comes up with, and that's kind of an actual statement for the people sitting in the back row back there. It'd be nice to have that in our hands.
I can show you what they're dangling in front of me, and you can, you know, it's pretty hard to turn your back on it when you struggled just to raise that early stage money, and all of a sudden it's there. So.
Again, thank you. I think Robert Keller. Thank you for coming today. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Keller, and I'm president and CEO of a small company called Silicon Informatics, based at the University Enterprise Lab in St. Paul. And I just learned about this hearing at 6 o'clock last night when I retrieved my voicemail. So I did not come with prepared statements, but I thought for purposes of the bill that's before you that I would just share my own experience, my own stories as one who's been in the trenches, who's raised money, and has done it not only in this company but also with another company about 8-10 years ago. So I can share those experiences with you. My company is not a biotech company in a classic sense. We operate at that intersection of information technology and life science. We're truly an information technology company at heart. We develop a software product that converts a high-performance PC into a supercomputer. And we're working right now with in collaboration with a researcher at the Mayo Clinic. The Mayo Foundation owns a portion of the common stock of my company. And we're working with Dr. Wan Pim Pang at the Mayo Clinic, who heads the computer-aided molecular design lab at the Mayo Clinic. He's truly a pioneer in the field, in his field, where he is using computer simulation to identify new drug leads. He has supercomputer facilities at his disposal at the Mayo Clinic. So we're taking his software that he's developed for use on his supercomputers, and we're making it perform extremely well on today's high-end PCs. And our product, our software product, currently is in evaluation by Dr. Pang in his lab. So I will leave you with a couple things. We're not fully funded yet as a company, and we've relied largely on friends and family for our initial funding. We've been in operation for a little over 3 years now. And one of the things the institutional investors, the venture community, as Doug Johnson represents, one of the things they've increasingly asked us for is to take out additional risk out of the company. That is, show us, they've told us to show us your beta customers, show us your revenues. That means that it's increasingly important for these early stage investors to sustain the company longer than originally expected. This is when I originally started the company, I thought it would take 12 to 18 months to get to that proof of concept to where we could be fundable by a venture institution. Now the venture institutions are saying, take out additional risk, show us those beta customers, show us those revenues. So we're increasingly reliant on the angel community, the community of friends and family who have already invested in the company. We're going back to them, asking them for that additional funds to get to that point. So it's very important. I would like to contrast my current experience to the other startup I was involved in about 8 or 10 years ago. And that startup was a semiconductor company called Rocket Chips, a Minnesota-based company. And as a startup, the company went to Ames, Iowa, because at the Iowa State University, there was a very good, very strong analog and mixed signal integrated circuit design program with 5 faculty members. And because of that program and because of the encouragement of the people in Iowa, the Iowa Department of Economic Development and the AMC Capital Corporation in particular, who invested in the seed round of the company. Apparently, the Iowa Economic Development people had sponsored some studies that pointed to the fact that at Iowa State University, they were a net exporter of high-tech talent. In other words, people, graduate students in this program, more of them would leave the state of Iowa after they'd spent several years receiving their master's and PhD degrees at Iowa State University than remained in Iowa. So they were incentivized to help support companies that would keep graduates of Iowa State University there in Ames. So one of the conditions was that we would open up a design center in Ames, Iowa, and we did that. Eventually, over the next 2 to 3 years, we had over 20 high-paid, highly skilled engineers working at our design center in Ames, Iowa. And by the time the company was acquired in the fall of 2000, we had approximately 70 to 75 high-tech people in 3 different design centers, one here in Minnesota, one in Iowa, and one in Austin, Texas. So I think that early stage support from the people in Iowa and the Iowa and the AMC Capital Corporation was extremely important in the launching of that company and contributed immensely to its success. So I guess if I were to leave you with 2 things, one of them is the importance of the early stage funding and the fact that institutional investors are asking the early stage investors to help their company get to that next level. They're increasingly reliant upon early stage funding to get to that point where the institutional investors are then interested in making that long-term commitment to the company. And the second point I would like to make is that even though this tax credit is a good thing, it's a step in the right direction, I think more importantly we need a culture, okay, a culture that seemed to exist in Iowa at the time that exists in other states. And if there's anything that we can do in Minnesota in addition to these tax credits to develop this economic, entrepreneurial culture, be very helpful to companies like us.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for the testifier? I want to thank you for coming in today. I know as an entrepreneur, all of you, as business people, you're very busy, and to donate your an hour or 2 hours of your time, not only am I grateful on the committee, I know how expensive it is for you, because somebody named Olson has told me how expensive it is. But again, thank you for coming today. I appreciate it. And Mr. Johnson, I appreciate your input here today and for the last few years as I've been involved in this. Thank you again. Representative Dabney, any final words before we bless your bill and pass it on, as we say? Just as you did to mine yesterday.
That's true, turnabout. Mr. Chair and members, I would share the chair's appreciation of the testifiers willing to come in today and explore the topic for myself as well as the committee, and I appreciate the enthusiasm that's being demonstrated here for the idea of working at the small end of the spectrum and helping to get these brilliant ideas to commercial, a point of commercialization that can provide the jobs and the thriving economy we want for Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. And members, take note if you know anybody on the tax committee. Thank you again, Representative Dabney. Thank you, testifiers. Members, tomorrow we have our Day on the Hill, our Bio Day on the Hill, and Representative Beard and myself want to make sure that you remember about that and have the opportunity to meet some of the people from the bio industry that will be here tomorrow. There are a good number of commercialized institutions. You have the opportunity to meet biotechnology industry experts from across the state to learn how they are changing the way we treat illness and prevent disease, obtain energy, and improve our agricultural economy. The biosciences are important for us, and we have made a point to try to get businesses that have that are connected to members' districts. So there, I'm not sure exactly how many there are coming tomorrow. 26 or 28, one or the other. So hopefully they are represented by the members. Will get a chance to talk to the business owners and see how important it is what we do. I'm going to. Representative Ruth, I know you've read the minutes and would think they're all in perfect order and like to move the minutes.
I'd be very, very honored to move the minutes.
All those in favor of the minutes?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign?
No.
Minutes have passed. And today we're going to meet, I'm going to meet with your caucus in room 346, just somewhere around the corner and one floor up.
Right after this,
at 10 after. So with that, members, unless there's any other business in front of us, we are adjourned.